This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Visit betterhelp.com/unexplained10. Because honestly, being a human can be exhausting. It's easy to forget sometimes that bad things happen on bright summer days, especially for those of us who live in places rarely blessed with such things. It is a unique sense of optimism, and perhaps even faith, we feel for the day ahead as we step from our various abodes into cool summer mornings, already laced with the exhilarating promise of heat. Mantled by the hazy blue sky above, as we head out to the park, or the river, or in the case of Morris and Peggy Gross, on that balmy August 4th morning in 1976, to the beach. So jarring it was then for Peggy's day to be punctured by that sudden sense of unease and queasiness that came over her in the early afternoon. Looking back on it in the weeks that followed, the couple from North London who were visiting relatives on the island of Jersey at the time, couldn't help but read more into it. Perhaps it was nothing. Perhaps it was everything. The following morning, as they prepared to set out for yet another blissful day on the sand, in what was the hottest British summer on record, they received the news that their 22-year-old daughter Janet had been involved in a motorbike accident. Janet and her friend Adam were riding through the city of Cardiff in Wales when they crashed. Adam, who was driving at the time, was killed instantly, while Janet had been left seriously injured, having been thrown from the back of the bike. Dropping everything, Morris and Peggy raced immediately to the University of Cardiff Hospital, where their daughter was being treated. Janet was unconscious when her parents arrived to take their place at her bedside, where they stayed until at 4:20 p.m. that afternoon. Having never regained consciousness, Janet died. 3 days later, Morris awoke just after 8 a.m. with no recollection of how and when he'd finally dozed off to sleep. And for the briefest of moments, in that space between the dream and the waking, there came that same tingle of summer optimism again, only for reality to come quickly rushing in with the force of 1,000 tsunamis. And with them came that one single word to take his breath away. Janet. There, Janet. Morris dragged himself to the bathroom and peered out of the window at the yellow lawn, bleached dry from weeks of drought, then looked across to his daughter's old bedroom window. The tears came fast, welling up in his eyes. He let them fall to the ground, when suddenly, with a jolt, something caught his attention. Just the night before, Morris had whispered secretly into the air for Janet to give them a sign if by some miracle she was still with them somehow. Perhaps make it rain, he asked, if she could. Morris stared in complete disbelief at the small section of roof below Janet's old bedroom window and the unmistakable layer of moisture on it, now glistening in the soft morning sun, while everywhere else was dry as bone. The strange incident of the wet roof was one of eight unusual coincidences Morris noticed in the immediate aftermath of his daughter's death, including the inexplicable stopping of his sister-in-law's clock at 4:20 p.m., the precise time that Janet had died. Believing that it had to mean something, Morris compiled a list of all the coincidences and sent them off to the UK's Society of Psychical Research, along with a request for an expert evaluation. Though Morris never received a definitive answer from the society, a few months later, he joined the organisation himself, keen to take part in any potential haunting investigations that might crop up, anything that might reveal the possibility of life surviving death. In September the following year, Morris was contacted by the SPR with exactly what he'd been looking for, an invitation to investigate reports of unusual disturbances taking place at a modest suburban house in Enfield, North London. Today, this case is widely considered to be the most documented, compelling, and terrifying supposed poltergeist haunting the UK has ever known. You're listening to Unexplained, and I'm Richard MacLean Smith. I won't tell you again, said Peggy as she pushed open the door. Get back to bed. But we're not doing anything, came a soft voice from out of the dark. Peggy switched on the light and stared at her daughter, 11-year-old Janet, tucked up in bed in the far corner of the room, then threw a stern look to her brother John in the opposite bed. We didn't, he insisted. It was the chair, said Janet. It's making a funny noise. The Hodgsons lived at 284 Green Street in Enfield, in a typical 1920s three-bed suburban house, part red brick and pebbled ash, with a small patch of garden out front and a long, narrow strip of garden out the back. Though the house was located on a fairly busy road, being opposite the local school made for a relatively quiet neighbourhood. That night of August 31st, 1977, 43-year-old Peggy Hodgson had been getting ready for bed in her own bedroom that she shared with her two other children, 13-year-old Margaret and 7-year-old Billy, when she heard a strange shuffling noise coming from Janet and John's room. Peggy rolled her eyes. Fine, she said, as she grabbed the chair and switched off the light. Now get to sleep. After taking the chair downstairs, Peggy returned moments later, only to hear that same sound again, coming from the second bedroom, like someone was dragging their feet across the floor. Heading back into the room, Peggy switched on the light again to find Janet and John still tucked up under their duvets. Then the noise came again. See, it isn't us, said Janet. Just then, a soft knocking came from what seemed like the other side of the party wall. Peggy stepped in for a closer listen, then heard something scrape behind her. Spinning round, she was surprised to find the children's heavy chest of drawers had somehow moved 18 inches away from the wall. as Janet and John watched on with confusion, a somewhat perturbed Peggy gently eased the chest of drawers back into place. When she turned back round, she heard that scraping sound again. Turning round once more, Peggy was horrified to see the chest of drawers had moved again, this time about a foot toward the door. With her heart now pounding in her chest, Peggy went again to ease the drawers back into place, only this time, no matter how hard she tried, they wouldn't budge. It felt, she later said, as though someone or something was pushing back from the other side. We often talk about how the advent of streaming has revolutionized the way we engage with audio and visual content, placing countless numbers of films, TV shows, and music tracks at our fingertips. But did you know this has also been happening for books too? Described as the Netflix for books, Scribd is quite simply the largest digital library in the world, and all of it accessible from your favorite device. With Scribd, you get instant access to millions of ebooks, audiobooks, magazines, and more. As a user myself, Scribd has been invaluable for me as a resource, giving me access to a huge range of sources that have helped inform many of the stories featured on Unexplained. Enjoy instant access to Scribd's entire library for less than the cost of a single book, and discover must-read new work from celebrated authors like Roxane Gay, Charles Yu, and more, premiering exclusively on Scribd. Right now, Scribd is offering our listeners a free 60-day trial. Go to tryscribd.com/unexplained for your free trial. That's tryscribd.com/unexplained to get 60 days of Scribd for free. Next door, at the home of Peggy and Vic Nottingham, the couple were watching TV with their 20-year-old son Gary when they heard an urgent knocking at the front door. Peggy opened it to find the terrified Hodgsons huddled together on the doorstep, dressed in their nightclothes. Moments later, the two families were sat in the Nottinghams' living room as Peggy Hodgson did her best to explain what had just taken place, believing that someone must have broken into their home and was playing a trick on them. Seeing that Peggy and her kids were clearly too scared to go back, the Nottinghams offered to go with them and check the house for any intruders. Returning next door, the Hodgsons and Peggy Nottingham waited in the living room as Vic and Gary made a quick sweep of the house and gardens. Much to everyone's relief, the pair returned moments later, having found nothing untoward. Feeling suddenly embarrassed by the whole saga, Peggy thanked them for their help and apologized for wasting their time. But just as the Nottinghams were about to leave, Vic heard a knocking on the wall by the stairs that seemed to be coming from outside. Vic rushed out the front door and stood for a moment in the dark, peering down the alleyway that ran down the side of the house, but no one was there. Back inside, a palpable sense of fear was beginning to spread as the knocking continued. "Make it stop," yelled Margaret. "It's okay, it's just the pipes," said Vic, as he attempted to locate the source of the noise. Only, as he soon realized, the knocking seemed to be following him wherever he went. Gary put his hand to the wall as the knocks rang out. "That's strange," he said. "I can feel the wall vibrating." Then Peggy Nottingham joined them at the bottom of the stairs. "It's almost like someone wants to get in," she said. Police Constable Carolyn Heaps and her partner, PC Hyams, were conducting a routine patrol of the local area when a call came through sometime around 10:30 p.m. to attend a possible break-in at 284 Green Street. Having been given no other information, the officers arrived at the house moments later, surprised to find the two families waiting for them with quite a different story to tell. "We think the house might be haunted," said Peggy sheepishly, well aware of how preposterous it sounded. Before PCs, Heaps and Hyams had time to react, Vic suggested they wait a moment to experience it for themselves, then promptly switched out the light, leaving all nine of them waiting together silently in the dark. As the minutes of complete silence ticked by, Hyams was just about to switch the light on when the sound of four knocks sent the children into hysterics. As Peggy did her best to calm them down, another four knocks rang out. The children screamed once again. Suspecting also that it was probably nothing but the pipes, PC Hyams quickly switched on the light and raced into the kitchen to examine the plumbing. PC Heaps, not quite sure what to do herself, began by asking the family to tell her again what had been happening as she took down notes. Then 10-year-old John suddenly froze. "What is it?" asked Heaps. "The chair," he said, pointing to the armchair nearest the door that was now quite clearly wobbling. When all of a sudden, it slid across the room. Hearing the screams from the kitchen, PC Hyams raced back to the living room. "The chair just moved," said Heaps in total bewilderment, estimating that it moved a good 3 feet in total. Then, seeing a marble on the TV stand, Heaps placed it on the spot where the chair had been, expecting it to reveal a clear slant in the ground, but the marble remained completely still. Despite the family's obvious distress at whatever it was that was going on, with nothing tangible to act on, all the officers could do under the circumstances was offer to return in a few days' time to check up on them all. That night, with the police and the Nottinghams having departed, the Hodgsons were once again left alone in their home. Too scared to sleep upstairs, they bedded down together in the living room and nervously awaited the next strange occurrence. A few days later, on the evening of Sunday, September 4th, an operator on the news desk of the Daily Mirror newspaper received a call from a woman in Enfield claiming that her neighbour's house was haunted. The operator rolled his eyes as the woman proceeded to outline all the peculiar things that had apparently been happening over the last few days, from banging on the walls to moving furniture and now even objects being thrown about the house. The operator was just about to put the phone down when the woman quickly cut in, "And the police have seen it too." With that, Daily Mirror photographer Graham Morris and journalist Douglas Bence were swiftly dispatched to Green Street in Enfield to investigate. Arriving at the Nottinghams' home a short time later to find the Hodgson children fast asleep and a deeply distressed Peggy Hodgson waiting for them. It was Peggy Nottingham's idea to call the press after yet another night of activity had driven the Hodgsons back to her home, feeling increasingly helpless about the whole situation. With the journalists keen to witness the strange activity, they promptly headed next door and let themselves into the property. Though neither believed the story one bit, it was hard to shake the pervasive air of weirdness as they stepped into the silence of the Hodgsons' home. The pair smirked nervously as they passed first into the living room and then on into the kitchen, with Graham holding his camera in front of him, ready to capture any signs of a ghost. Things only got weirder when one by one the children were brought back into the house, fast asleep in the arms of Peggy and the Nottinghams. After more than 2 hours of waiting in the house, however, the journalists saw nothing untoward, and by 2:30 a.m., the pair of them decided to call it a night. But just as they were walking back to the car, Peggy Nottingham's father, who'd been staying with them that weekend, raced out of the house and shouted after them. "It's happening," he said breathlessly. It took me a long time to realise that it isn't the bed or even the mattress, necessarily, that makes for the perfect sleeping experience. It's the sheets. Now, I might not be sure of much in life, but this I can guarantee you. That feeling when you get home from a stay at your parents' house, or a night at a fancy hotel, if you're so lucky, and your bed just doesn't feel the same. I'm telling you now, it's the sheets. Recently, I was lucky enough to get a set of sheets from Boll & Branch, and if it wasn't for the fact that I have to wash them from time to time, I'd never take them off, which is just as well because, incredibly, they get even softer with every wash. Buttery soft, lightweight in a 100% organic cotton sateen weave, Boll & Branch sheets are also made with toxin-free processes and fair trade certification to ensure workers are paid fair living wages. To experience the best sheets you've ever felt, choose Boll & Branch. You can try them worry-free for 30 nights with free shipping and returns. And my listeners can get an exclusive 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code unexplained at bollandbranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L and branch.com. Promo code unexplained. Graham and Douglas could hear the screams before they reached the front door, emanating from out of the kitchen at the back of the house. Hurrying through, Graham burst into the kitchen and froze. Amid the screaming of the children, the clattering of objects could be heard, as one after another, pieces of Lego and marbles were sent whizzing around the room. Remembering suddenly why he was there, Graham grabbed the wide-angle lens and ducked into a far corner to see if he could capture all the chaos swirling above his head. As he reeled off a series of shots, he had just enough time to catch a sudden movement out of the corner of his eye when something hit him in the middle of his forehead, causing him to yell out in pain. Graham rubbed at the now tender spot on his head that was already becoming raised, then looked down at the small piece of Lego now lying at his feet on the floor, and then back up at all the people in the room and tried to figure out where on earth it could have come from. Later that day, shrouded in the dark red light of the processing room, Graham stood over the developing tray, watching as the photochemicals swished about, while underneath, a ghostly picture began to emerge. It was a shot of the Hodgson's kitchen, taken just at the moment that the Lego brick had struck him on the head, showing the only two people in the room who had a clear angle to throw it at him. One was his colleague Douglas Spence, stood with both hands in his pockets, while the other was Peggy Nottingham, stood with her arms clearly folded across her chest. It was Monday, September 5th, when Morris Gross, working in his office in Holloway, received the call from the Secretary of the Society of Psychical Research, Eleanor O'Keefe, that would change his life forever. Morris could feel the hairs stand up on the back of his neck as he listened to Eleanor detail the phone call she'd just taken from a journalist in Enfield. As she explained, it sounded like they had a potential poltergeist case on their hands that would need immediate investigating. It was everything Morris had been looking for. Morris had barely finished the call before he was out the door and hopping into his car. An hour later, he arrived at number 284 Green Street. The street was quiet when Morris arrived, parking up just outside the house. As thoughts of his daughter Janet rushed inevitably to the front of his mind, Morris took a moment to compose himself, then stepped from the vehicle and made his way to the front door. Morris was welcomed in by George Fallows, senior reporter of the Daily Mirror, who'd also rushed to the house after hearing about Graham Morris and Douglas Bence's experiences. Fallows ushered Morris through to the living room to meet the family. With 10-year-old John having left that morning to go back to the boarding school he attended for children with learning differences, Morris was introduced first to Peggy, then Margaret and little Billy, and lastly, Janet. Morris couldn't help but flinch a little at the name. "Hello, Janet. I'm Morris. It's very nice to meet you," he said. Janet just about managed a shy smile in return, but it was clear the atmosphere in the home was far from a happy one. Sensing the family's fear, Morris sought first to reassure them that what they were experiencing was not something to be afraid of, and that, like all things, it would soon pass. Peggy wondered if it might be the ghost of a child, a 4-year-old girl from the local area who only a few years before had been murdered by her father, who then went on to kill himself. Peggy had bought some furniture from the man once and wondered if perhaps she had somehow brought the spirit, if that was what it was, into her home. She'd thrown the pieces out just in case. Though Morris couldn't confirm exactly what it was, the one thing he did know, as he told Peggy, was that the family shouldn't blame themselves for anything that was taking place. Though it was painful to see the Hodgsons in such distress, Morris couldn't resist the tremble of excitement he felt as he entered their home and its strangely charged atmosphere. There was something there, he thought. Of that, there was no doubt. Over the next few days, however, Morris saw nothing strange himself, as it appeared the apparent haunting had come to an end. But then everything changed. First came the familiar banging in the walls, followed by more items whizzing through the air as photographer Graham Morris, back for more, worked in vain to capture it all. At 1:15 a.m. in the early morning of September the 8th, Morris joined the men from the Daily Mirror upstairs on the landing outside the family's 3 bedrooms. With one full of disused items, the family shared the other 2 between them. As the men waited expectantly in the dark, a loud crash was heard coming from the 2nd bedroom. When the men rushed in, they found Janet and Margaret seemingly asleep in the 2 beds, and their bedroom chair flung 4 feet from where it had been only moments ago. Janet stirred, then began to cry. Seeing her distress, Morris was quick to reassure her that there was nothing to worry about, and that they were there the whole time, keeping watch. After coaxing her back to sleep, Morris righted the chair, and the men once again left the room. A short time after returning to the landing, another crash was heard. Once again, the men rushed into the room to find the chair tossed to the side, far away from where they'd left it. Morris and Fallows looked immediately to the 2 children, apparently still fast asleep in their beds, then stepped toward Janet's bed and stared down at the girl's closed eyelids. With his fingers, Morris lifted one of them, revealing the white of her eyeball rolled back underneath. Then Fallows picked up her arm and let it flop down onto the covers. Satisfied she was completely asleep, the men left the room again. At 3:30 a.m., after compiling his notes, Morris returned home.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Sign up today and start communicating in less than 48 hours. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. You can also log into your account anytime to send a message to your counsellor. BetterHelp is not a crisis line, nor self-help. It is professional counselling done securely online with a broad range of expertise available. And with BetterHelp's commitment to facilitating great therapeutic matches, they make it especially easy and free to change counselors to help you find the right fit. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Unexplained listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/unexplained. That's betterhelp.com/unexplained. Join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
In the evening of September 8th, Morris attended a Society of Psychical Research lecture at Kensington Public Library about the nature of poltergeist activity. Nodding along as he took notes, he listened attentively as the speaker outlined what he believed to be the two most likely explanations for such activity. The first was that all the noises and moving about of items was in fact caused by pubescent children, who were often found to be at the centre of such activity, unwittingly wielding psychic powers brought on by the intense hormonal transition of puberty. The second possibility was that the often terrifying, supposedly paranormal events were caused by spirits of disgruntled individuals feeding off the energy of the living. Also in the audience that night was 42-year-old Guy Lyon Playfair. Very much the antithesis of the self-made Morris, Guy was brought up in British colonial India, the son of a British Army major, and studied modern languages at Cambridge University. At some point, having moved to Brazil in the 1960s, where he worked as a freelance journalist, after a strange experience with an apparently psychic healer, Guy developed an interest in the paranormal. At the end of the talk, he watched as Morris addressed the audience, asking for volunteers to help him with his investigation at Green Street. Though Guy was interested, having just spent the last 15 months writing his own account of a supposed poltergeist haunting in Rio de Janeiro, he'd been looking forward to taking some time off. Nonetheless, Guy introduced himself to Morris after the talk and suggested he get in touch if things start to go out of control. Back at the Hodgson's home later that night, with Morris having returned to check in on the family, he sat patiently sipping tea with Janet, Margaret and Billy as they went through all the events of that day, from all the marbles being flung around to how the drawer under the TV had slid out on its own, when all of a sudden a marble flew through the air, narrowly missing Morris by inches, while up on the wall a set of hanging chimes had begun shaking from side to side, as if a light breeze had just blown through the room. Then a scream came from the kitchen. Morris and the kids hurried through to find Peggy staring strangely at the bathroom door. "There's something in there," she said, her voice trembling. Morris asked for silence as they all stood together, eyes fixed on the bathroom door, when suddenly, in one movement, it swung open and closed. The family gasped in horror as Morris tried his best to calm the situation, telling them again there was nothing to be frightened of, while watching incredulously as the door continued to swing open and shut a further three times. And in that moment, Morris could have sworn he felt a cold wind wrap around his legs. Though Morris was at a loss to explain exactly what he'd seen so far, when a box was flung from a table while 11-year-old Janet was close by, he realised that Janet was almost always around when the strange events occurred. After speaking to Peggy Nottingham's father the following day, it was clear that others were beginning to suspect that she might be responsible. Finding a quiet moment with Peggy, Morris advised her to keep an eye on her daughter, just to be sure she wasn't playing games with them all. He knew all too well how difficult children could be at that age, he said, fondly. And as rumours of the peculiar activity began to spread throughout the neighbourhood, many began to question the minds of the family, while others made a point of crossing the road as they approached the house, terrified of what might happen should they get too near. The local gossip would only intensify when, on September 10th, the Hodgson story finally hit the news in a front-page article in the Daily Mirror. Written by George Fallows under the title House of Strange Happenings, it went on to say, with the emotional atmosphere at the house and the neighbourhood ranging from hysteria through terror to excitement and tension, it has been difficult to record satisfactory data. Nevertheless, I am satisfied the overall impression of our investigation is reasonably accurate. To the best of our ability, we have eliminated the possibility of total trickery. Later that night, Peggy Hodgson and her neighbour Peggy Nottingham were joined by Maurice Gross on London's LBC Radio to discuss the bizarre events. When they returned to Green Street at 2 a.m, they found another reporter waiting for them outside. Rosalind Morris was a producer from BBC Radio 4 who'd been sent to report on the story with nothing much else to report on that day. Rosalind proceeded to spend the night in the house where she witnessed beds being shaken and a chair flung across a room, stating later that whatever had happened that night, she could not explain it. The following day, at his home in London, Guy Playfair was listening to the radio when he heard Rosalind Morris's report of what had taken place the night before. Hearing the tiredness in Maurice Gross's voice, he realised immediately that he and the family were in desperate need of help. You've been listening to Unexplained, Series 6, Episode 4, The Widening Gyre, Part 1 of 3. Part 2 will be released next week, Friday, November 5th. If you enjoy Unexplained and would like to help support us, you can now do so via Patreon. To receive access to ad-free episodes, just go to patreon.com/unexplainedpod to sign up. Unexplained, the book and audiobook, featuring 10 stories that have never before been covered on the show, is now available to buy worldwide. You can purchase through Amazon, Barnes & Noble and Waterstones, among other bookstores. All elements of Unexplained, including the show's music, are produced by me, Richard McLean Smith. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and feel free to get in touch with any thoughts or ideas regarding the stories you've heard on the show. Perhaps you have an explanation of your own you'd like to share. You can reach us online at unexplainedpodcast.com or Twitter at unexplainedpod and Facebook at facebook.com/unexplainedpodcast.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.